red shoes. It's Jesus in the everyday, me and you. The good news in shoes.
This is the Jesus Good News the Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good news in shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content.
When I die and I lay me to rest, gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky.
Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Marquette program, Joe Marquette.
Well, good, because you know what happened is I forgot to disconnect the phone call, so I just got a message saying, your message now is 2 hours long, and you're time to quit.
Good grief.
You ever do that?
No.
No, but, no, it was, I forgot to hang it up, but hey, you know.
We are on the air, Joe.
That's why I was talking to Pastor Dave here about being on the air, and I, all of a sudden he was saying 3, 2, 1, and my phone was talking to me, and I thought I had turned off the sound, and it was talking to me. This is the Team Martech Hour, and Joe Martech is the only official team member that's here. We do have two unofficial team members here. One is Pastor Dave, who is usually the moderator, who now has become extremely sophisticated and intelligent when it comes to investing.
Well, not entirely. I'm still working on it.
And Alan Love, retired prosecuting attorney, who is a special guest member of the team and has been for the last almost 2 years. Those of you that know, I love picking on Alan. I call him our messy Jew because he looks just, if you stereotype a cartoon of a rabbi, mm-hmm. I mean, Alan, I hate to tell you, you know, you are it. Yes. We're not going to talk about the swimming lessons today.
Well,
we're going to skip
you know,
that part.
Actually, I think I've earned the introduction like Vince. You know, Vince was a professor in college, but not at Columbia.
Yeah.
Well, I taught the breaststroke, but not in the synagogue. So,
that was
last week.
You missed last week's show. You had to be here to appreciate it because the timing was just. It was. I guess that we were just watching Tim Conway on the Carol Burnett show, and the timing with the comedy.
Yeah.
You know, and those of you that have lived long enough to remember the Carol Burnett show and Tim Conway and Harvey Korman and that was live stuff, no pre-recorded, no nothing. And we got into one of those episodes last week, and the timing was just absolutely absurdly perfect, and all of us were cracking up. Even Alan, he didn't know why he was laughing, but the three of us were laughing so loud, had to laugh.
That's what makes comedy, timing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Timing is probably 80% time. I mean, comedy is 80% timing.
Well, you know, that was one of my very favorite clients, who actually is a regular listener to WCNO, who lives down in Palm Beach, and he's an orchidist. Do you know what an orchidist is?
I'm going to wildly guess that it's something to do with orchids. But
boy,
I'm
is probably... that you really are fast today.
Well, either I'm fast or I'm fasting, one of the two.
What happened is, his job is to take care of people's orchids.
Oh, okay.
He's got the greatest job in the world. He goes to work in shorts and T-shirt, and mm-hmm. he talks to the orchids and makes them all happy, and he gets to live in Palm Beach and lives and works within like 5 miles of his house.
Wow.
And he just has to put up with rich people, that's all, but nothing serious.
But they're gone.
But
well,
I remember,
they wouldn't be taking care of his orchids.
But they're still taking care of the orchids.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
But I remember I was sitting with him some time ago, because we have had some... Have you ever noticed that every once in a while that somebody criticizes Joe Martek on this show? I mean, can you imagine somebody actually doing that?
It's hard. It's far-fetched for me to...
And one of the, every once in a while, people have called in because I am not always serious. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was talking to him one day, and I says, well, I sure hope Jesus has a sense of humor. And he said, Joe, of course he has a sense of humor. He has to put up with you. So it was appropriate.
It's true, yeah.
Anyway, back in 2004, Joe Martek, financial advisor, I'm also called a stockbroker. That's called lots and lots of licenses. As far as I know, I'm licensed to do everything, and that doesn't mean I do everything, and that doesn't mean that my broker-dealer does everything, but I carry all these different licenses. But back in 2004, I decided to start doing radio shows, and I wanted to get together with local experts to help people. So we started off with Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. Now, that's a big word, folks. Those of you that have car insurance, house insurance, or any type of insurance, the word independent, that he means he doesn't work for one insurance company, he works for the client, and under Dan's umbrella, he has roughly 100 different companies. Now, how important is that? Well, those of you that have lived through Hurricane Andrew back in 92, when all of a sudden some of the companies were non-renewing and canceling people and charging 2 and 3 and 4 times as much for their insurance, it became very important, because when one company falls out of favor, Dan has got 20 or 30 or 40 other companies that some might be in favor. So the word independent was big to me, and then the second thing was to find somebody that had been in business a long time. Well, Dan's only about 38 years right here in Port St. Lucie, so that's what's called a long time.
I would think so.
And a monster thing with me was to make sure that whoever was on this show, They could be funny and we could do humor, but the major thing they had to have was integrity. They had to be honest. They had to do the right thing for their clients. And with that in mind, I wanted people that had all been in business for a long period of time. Not that people that are new in business don't have integrity or credibility, but quite honestly, those that have been in business 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years have earned the right to be in one place, and we all know that bad words travel faster than good words. So
true.
having somebody that has a very, very, very good, solid reputation was critical. So then the next member of the group was Greg Fasula, attorney. Now, when I was 25 years ago, when I'd go see a new prospect or suspect like Pastor Dave here, I'd sit down at their house, or they'd come to my office, and we would talk about stuff, and I'd ask if you had a will or a trust. And if you said no, I kind of had a responsibility to put the cart and the horse in the right area, in the right order, because when you die without such a thing, the state of Florida's got it all figured out, and your heirs are going to be very unhappy, because it might take 6 months, a year, or even 2 years, or maybe longer, to sort all that stuff out that could have been avoided. So then what I would do, if I was talking to Pastor Dave and Dave says, okay, I live in South Stewart, well, then I'd go find an attorney that was close, and I'd go interview him. And when I interviewed these attorneys, it was like professional to professional, and they were nice guys. Then I'd take Pastor Dave and his wife in there to meet this nice guy, and all of a sudden he became pretentious and arrogant and not user-friendly. Then the next thing that happened was price. Now, I knew in my heart what attorneys should charge for certain things, and I never ever say to an attorney what you can or cannot charge, but I would ask if I was to see him, I said, listen, I want to make sure you don't gouge my client. Well, let me tell you, on a few occasions, I never wanted to talk to that attorney ever again because, in my not too humble opinion, he overcharged for the amount of work. Now, they get paid by the hour, and I understand that, but making $1,000 an hour, I think, is a little overpriced.
Just a tad.
Just a tad. You know, yeah. this is not L.A. or New York City or whatever in the world they may charge. So the concept was, it's the amount of work necessary to get it done. Mm-hmm. And some attorneys would put together these great, big, beautiful books that were stamped in gold, and you weighed them, and they were full of fluff. I mean, it was 10 pages of meat and 100 pages of fluff. Well, then I met Greg Fasula. And same concept. Greg was in Port St. Lucie and went to meet him. Nice guy. Went with the client. And can you believe this? Greg was a good listener. He wasn't pretentious. He wasn't arrogant. He wasn't a know-it-all. He was patient. And I have said this to Greg. I said, Greg, did you learn this in law school? And he said, no. The thing that happened was he was a flat, good person, high integrity, good person, and he did not gouge people. And he did not do these 20-pound books. He gave people meat, skipped the potatoes and the vegetables and the salad and all that stuff. He gave them what they needed, and his prices were better than good. And they still are. He's very fair, very fair. Now, he hates it when I talk about price because, back again, attorneys get paid based on the amount of work they have to do. But normally, when I meet with whoever it is as a prospect, I know how much work he's going to have to do. So I pretty much have in my heart and my stomach understand what should be charged. Nobody in the last 20-some years has ever complained about Greg Fasula. Just a flat, good guy. So when it comes to attorneys, no matter what happens, if a client of mine has a problem, first thing I do is say we talk to Greg. Greg never charges anybody to talk to him the first time. And then Greg might say, no, I don't do that. But I know somebody that does, and this is who I would recommend, and I take that as gospel, because when Greg says somebody else will do this, Greg knows that person and knows that for sure they're going to do the right thing for people. So that's how we started the group. Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, and Joe Martek, financial advisor. And then, over a period of the next few years, I always wanted to have a CPA as part of our group. But to find, again, a user-friendly, with experience, et cetera, was not the easiest thing to do. And it's hard to imagine that CPAs, by nature, are not usually arrogant, but they are somewhat often know-it-alls because they have that degree behind them. Mm-hmm. Well, met Vince Rosino, and Vince is a regular guy. He's just a flat, good guy, again, high integrity. You know, and you know, Dave, that Vince and I very often will come in here early, and between you and Pastor Tom, sometimes we get into some religious debate. Vince is a big Bible study. He knows that thing better than any preacher in the world, so he loves to debate if we can get it going. Yeah. We've often talked about starting a little Bible study class here, like a half an hour before each show, and get a dozen people or so in here to do a little bit of a rip of that Bible apart. You know how people interpret things. You have noticed that.
Yeah, I have noticed that. Yeah.
Alan, I know you've noticed that.
I have, yes.
And I think we all have. And it's I know one of my favorite, in fact, my very favorite preacher in the world, he used to start off his quote sermons with, okay, class, pay attention. And he'd say, here's the page. Let's get going here. We're going to pick this apart. And he would start teaching the Bible. But it was teaching. It wasn't really preaching. And, and he was just magnificent at it. And of course, he'd pick out the Greek words and the different explanations. It's like English. You can have one word that has four different meanings. My favorite one is dessert or desert or dessert. There's three different meanings spelled all the same. Well, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, dessert is something you eat.
D-E-S.
Dessert is somebody you leave.
Well, desert has one S, dessert has two.
Okay, come on, now you're being correct. He's testing my intelligence again.
We may just say dessert has one extra S more than it needs.
So, okay, yeah. There you go, right? But there are other words, and basically the Greek does the same thing. They right. they have context that make it, and you as a preacher know better than me what I'm saying. So that meant a whole bunch to me to get somebody that would interpret, because some people think, okay, this is literal. Well, hey, careful now. You just have to pick it apart and make sure that it's all understood. Anyway, then the Great Recession hit, and the word real estate became a monster word. So Ms. Victoria Lloyd, who I've only known since 1980, who has been in real estate that whole time and is probably, no, forget the word probably, is the hardest working person I know, period, who is the most credible. And I think every one of us gets a little upset when somebody says they're going to call you back and they don't, or you call and leave messages and they don't call you back, and you do it more than once, and it gets you more and more upset. Victoria, I'm telling you what, if she didn't return a call when she said she was going to, it's because she's dead, dying, or in the hospital and going to die, because she is always going to do it, period. If there's a rare occasion that she didn't get the message, she's embarrassed to beat all. I mean, you'll probably have to listen to 4 minutes of apologies for something that she didn't do. But she's credible, extremely hardworking. Alan, you know that from firsthand experience, right?
Yes, I do, yes.
Yep. And I think everybody that's ever met her, I've always called her Miss Bubbles. She's got this only two speeds. She's either full blast or sleeping. She's Miss Bubbles, always has been, but just knows her stuff. Which leads me to Mike Polis, mortgage broker, back again during the Great Recession. There was words out on the media, in the newspaper, on the internet, on television, that there was no mortgage money available, and that was never true. Never true. Always, during the recession, VA had no money down for veterans. USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, had a mortgage with no money down. Now, each one of these mortgages you have to qualify for, because during the Great Recession, they used to say if you could fog a mirror, you could get a mortgage. Well, all of a sudden, they went back to the old rules. You had to prove that you could actually afford it. What a scenario, right? Mm. Hey, let's give you a loan that you can't pay back. Well, that's kind of dumb, but that's pretty much what happened during the Great Recession. So when the new rules came in, basically they went back to the old rules, which said prove that you can afford to make the payment. Now, the way they did that was one with a credit report, because if you're not paying your bills, your credit's bad, well, you have to have a reason to have that. The reason might be an extreme health problem. You might have lost your job. These are valid reasons for having bad credit. Those can be corrected and handled, and a guy like Mike Polis will work with somebody to explain why people have these blips on their record. They can be corrected, and sometimes just an explanation of why will help that lender understand that when somebody is deathly ill, don't have insurance to cover certain expenses, lost a job, those are mitigating circumstances that now have been corrected, but those blips are still on the record. Well, those can be explained. So Mike is one of these people that when you look to get a mortgage, you call him up on the phone, and he'll ask you for permission to run a credit report, and he'll do it for you right away. Sometimes when you're on the phone, and in 15 minutes, he'll tell you where you stand. So you don't have to wait 2 or 3 weeks like if you walk into some lenders. So the whole concept of the group, very simply, was to help people and educate people. And we've talked about this, Alan, till we're blue in the face. An educated consumer is what we want. So we try to teach people on each area of our expertise, and when putting the group together, the group was designed to have different areas of expertise that us as individuals did not have, so we overlap. So we've been extremely grateful, we've been blessed, we've helped a lot of people, we've helped people that had nothing to do with our different areas, but just because we've got about 200 years worth of combined experience in our group, and that's not even counting Alan. If I threw Alan in, that's 300 years.
Joe, you know, I think it's time that we let people know today that we can help them. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate, is 888-221-8990.
And that is toll free.
That's toll free from anywhere.
Anywhere.
Not even in Florida. You can call if you're listening to us on the internet, WCNO.com.
Yep, WCNO.com.
Kentucky or Alaska, wherever.
Wherever you may be. Not the Bahamas. But you can't.
And we got a call.
You can't get it. And we got somebody. I'll take it. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Joe Martek, this is Todd.
Todd, I remember you.
Yeah, I hope so.
I
had a real quick question for you.
Go ahead.
Okay, I went to see my my tax lady.
Okay.
She said all the taxes should be good because I was making that extra money.
Right.
Now, she did tell me that there could be a tax problem if I put too much money into that fund that I'm doing.
Nope.
And I told her, I didn't think there should be.
Nope.
Because it's not a 401k, it's just something I started myself.
There you go. Now, what she did was, and she's telling you the right thing, if it was an IRA, individual retirement account, you're allowed to put $6,500 a year into that, and that becomes tax deferred, which meaning you wouldn't pay tax on it this year. You would then pay tax when you retire and start taking it out. But we have not established an IRA, but as this year progresses, we may. Because if what we want to do, and if Vince Rizzino was sitting here today, we'd say the same thing. We want to do everything that's right and legal and honest, but we don't want to overpay the government if we can avoid it.
Absolutely.
So,
I appreciate that.
So
I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
You're absolutely 100%. And I'm going to repeat this again, and I really appreciate you calling in with that, because not everybody understands the concept of putting money aside for savings. Now, in an annuity contract, which you have, that money is tax-deferred just as if it was in an IRA account, meaning you don't pay taxes on it every year. You only start paying taxes when you take it out. And then when you take it out, you don't pay taxes on what you put in unless it's an IRA. You pay taxes on the gain, whatever you make. So let's just use an example of you. Let's say in the next year or two you put in $100,000, and then you finally start taking money back out, and now it's worth $200,000. Well, the $100,000 that is profit is subject to tax, but the $100,000 that you put in is not subject to tax. Got it?
Great.
Now,
yes, sir.
Now, then, on the other hand, if we take $6,500 a year and start a contract that is strictly an IRA, that money would not be paid on tax. So this year, let's say you made $50,000, you would deduct the $6,500 from your $50,000, which means you'd only make $43,500. Am I right doing my math, Alan?
Yes.
Now, the $6,500 would then be in this retirement account, and there'd be no tax. It'd be deferred until you started taking it out, which when you turn 70 and one half, you have to start taking it out. And then it would be subject to ordinary income tax. So we might end up with two separate contracts for you, one with $6,500 and one with who knows how much. But the key is this: you can't put more than $6,500 a year in, and you have to be working to put that money into the account. So your accountant was doing the right thing by saying she didn't know if it was an IRA or if it was not an IRA. And now I'm telling you, you don't have one, but we may end up having one.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. And thank you for answering my call.
Todd, Mr. Landro, thank you so much. And one of these days you'll convince that wife of yours to talk to me.
Yeah, your nickname's Murdy or Birdoff or whatever.
Yeah, I know. Todd, you have a wonderful day. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Joe, I have a question related to the last call. Let's say that you're working for a company that has a 401k.
Right.
But you also have a home business where you sell things out of your garage that people want. Are you able to have a 401k and an IRA, with the 401k being maxed at the maximum amount and the IRA, or just one of the two?
Well, what happens is the government allows you to put so much money a year aside, period. Now, in a 401k, there's a limit. Now, if you max out your 401k, I don't think you can go out and start an IRA, even though you have a separate business. Now, you might be able to do, quote, a deferred comp plan. There's all kinds of other instruments that, as an example, there's a solo 401k There are simple IRAs. There are all of these different instruments. Now, what happens is sometimes you can put up to $50,000 a year aside and not pay tax on it into an approved retirement plan. Now, so I don't want to come up with a yes or no answer here. Each person has to be looked at individually to find out exactly who they work for, how much is contributed, what the limits are, what kind of business it is, how that business is set up. There's all kinds of rules.
So in short, what you're basically saying is one plan does not fit all. That's why it's wise to go see a person like you and in consultation with Vince.
Or some, yeah. The key thing is this. Once I talk to somebody, let's see, I don't know the answer. You know what I do? I've got a broker-dealer that's got 700 reps out there, and they've got attorneys and CPAs and everything in the world, and I give them your circumstances, you the prospect, and say, here's our situation. What can we do? And they'll say, well, we can do a 457 or a 609 or pick a number. You know how the government's got all these different plans, and make sure they stay legal and yet accomplish their goal. Because let's take a person that's extremely lucky in 1 year and they may make $1 million. Well, all of a sudden they're going to be paying $300,000 and $400,000 in taxes. Well, the government says, hey, we can set up a retirement account, a special account that allows you to save a tremendous amount of that money and not pay tax on it. But you'll pay later on, it'll be subject to tax when you're retired. But the key thing we have to do is put the cart and the horse in the proper order. Making sense?
Yes, it is.
1-888-221-8990. Now, not everybody has that wonderful problem of making too much money. But every once in a while, the key that comes in is, how much of your pay do you want to donate to the government? Mm. Quote, want to donate. That word want is a pretty hard word to put on people.
Absolutely.
Some of us don't mind. Some of us understand. But none of us want, I think, to overpay our taxes. We want to contribute what is the right amount, the fair amount. But if there's ways to avoid, not to evade, but avoid, avoiding taxes is legal. Evading taxes is illegal.
Amen.
So we just want to do the right thing. So my whole goal with anybody is to sit down and figure out. And, you know, that brings me into what my job is. My job is to sit with an individual and listen. My job is not to come up to a conclusion until I've listened. I want to find out what your goal is. We need to know how old you are, how much time you've got in theory, how much you can afford to save, how often you're going to need to take it out. Like I hear this all the time. Somebody says, okay, Joe, I've got $10,000 that I'm not using right now. I want to invest it. I said, okay, how long do you think before you're going to want to have that $10,000 back? He said, well, maybe in a couple months. I said, okay, fine, you put it in the bank. you don't invest money that you need to get in and get out. Why? Well, one, you got to pay me. Can you imagine that?
I can certainly imagine.
Well, you automatically deduct a commission, which now that makes you go backwards. So now you've got to have the money invested for a period of time to make up that part. Mm-hmm. Second part is, depending on the investment, if you're in the market, the market goes up and down on a daily basis. Like today, it went down around 1%, give or take, 1.5%, right?
Well, it came back down about 0.5%.
Okay. So what happens is, if you put the money in yesterday, $100,000, then today it would be worth $98,000 or $99,000, let's just say.
Sure.
And you cashed it in, all of a sudden you took a $1,000 or $2,000 loss. That doesn't make you very happy. Mm-mm. So you don't want to look at things short term. You want to look at things over a longer period of time. Now, there are certain investments that don't have as much volatility, but they oftentimes don't have the upside. Like last year, Alan and I talk about this quite often, the Standard & Poor's 500 was up around 19%. The NASDAQ 100 was up 25%. Now, the S&P 500, for those of you who have heard these words, that is 500 of America's biggest companies. They call them the blue chips. The S&P 500 is considered the benchmark of investing, because it takes, again, America's biggest 500 companies and monitors them and say, here's how they did for the whole year, how much they grew. And last year it was 19%. Hmm. The NASDAQ 100 is heavily tech oriented, which means Netflix and Apple and with the fangs, right? Facebook and and Google and all of them. Anyway, and they've got 100 of them. And last year, the tech companies did extremely well, and in fact are still doing very well. And most of us think they will continue to do well because tech appears to be the driving mechanism for this whole world. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what we take for granted here with cell phones and and all the stuff that we never even dreamed about 20 and 30 years ago. So anyway, that was up around 25%. So when I look at somebody, like I've got a young man, and Alan, you'd understand this. Dad leaves him $100,000. Kid does not need the money. He's going to college. He's doing fine. He wants long-term growth. Now, he's not sophisticated. He doesn't really want to really learn it because he's going to be a dentist, but he's going to need that money at some point. So I said, look, why don't we just take a decent approach to it, but a pretty safe approach, meaning let's bet on America and go with the Standard & Poor's 500, 500 blue chips, and the NASDAQ 100, and we probably will average around 10% a year, maybe a little better, without being crazy. Now, yeah, we could have bought Facebook and doubled, tripled, quadrupled our money. We could have bought oil when it was down low and got up high. But that's high speculation. Do you want to speculate? Do you want to take a risk at losing money? And if the answer is yes, well, we can do that. You know, we can find places where you might make a home run, but you might lose. Because not every, look at Enron, big company out of business. General Motors, they went bankrupt. People lost their money. There's one company after another that we used to think they're all, you know, like General Electric. Didn't we always think that was probably the safest company on earth?
Yes, and now I believe it went to a new 52-week low today.
Yeah, 10, 12 bucks or something.
Around 11, I think. But Joe, a person like that who wants long-term investments, mm-hmm. Say you're 25 and you have $100,000,
right,
that you accumulated or got from inheritance, whatever. Too young for an annuity, but what about putting it in to like ETFs that track the NASDAQ 100?
Well, what you just said is exactly what I did in an ETF.
Okay.
Now, you know how we...
Let's explain what an ETF is.
Well, we know what a mutual fund is, right?
As far as I know, unless you've changed the definition.
No, it's still a pizza.
Still a pizza, right, yeah.
Now, for those of you that don't know, and this is kind of our humor thing, but the way I explain how a mutual fund works, you take a pizza. Now, what happens is Pastor Dave and Alan, they go out and they start a mutual fund company, and they buy stock in 100 different companies, and they buy $100,000 worth of each one of these companies, and they put it inside of this mutual fund. Now, if we do 100 times 100, how much is that?
$10 million.
So now we got $10 million in here because Dave's pretty deep pockets, you know, and Alan's got even deeper pockets. And then Joe Martek comes along and says, hey, guys, I would like to own all 100 of those companies. And so Dave says, no problem. You can give us $100 million plus a commission and we'll leave. And I said, no, I can't afford that. I want $10,000 worth, but I want all 100 companies. Dave gets together with Alan and says, let's slice Joe out a little piece of our pie and give him all 100 companies fractionally, a fraction of that whole pie.
And you would own 0.1% of each company.
And then what happens is, the reason for doing that is if one of those companies gets in trouble, I've still got 99 that should be okay. So the concept of the mutual fund is to spread your risk out over a big group rather than just any one company. Now, the mutual fund and an ETF, let's take the same pie. They look the same. They smell the same. Only one's got pepperoni and one's got mushrooms.
I'll take the mushrooms.
You'll take the mushroom. What happens with a mutual fund, they have different rules. And I'm not going to get into specifics, but let's just put it this way. The ETFs were started a few years ago as a substitute for mutual funds. They look just like them, act just like them. Dave and Alan would still get a fee, but normally the fee would not be as high as the mutual fund for the same pie, normally. Number two, that fund in an ETF is more liquid, meaning I can buy it and sell it easier than I can buy or sell a mutual fund. So when I look at somebody, and especially a person that's not sophisticated, I try to say, okay, fine. Have you heard of ETFs? No. Have you heard of mutual funds? No. Well, let's spend the next 20 minutes explaining the difference of them. And then when you glaze over and don't care, we're still going to probably go to the ETF because it's going to not cost you as much money, number one. Number two, it's got more liquidity. It just seems to be a smarter way to go today. Alan, is that a fair way to phrase it?
Yes, and one advantage of the ETFs is by buying one stock, or an ETF trades like a stock, so you buy one ETF. Let's use the Dow Jones Industrial Average as an example. There are 30 companies in the Dow. If you wanted to have a pizza that was just the Dow 30, you would have to buy shares of all 30 stocks and pay 30 commissions in doing that.
Right.
With an ETF that tracks the Dow, in other words, it tracks its performance. If the Dow goes up 1%, the Dow ETF will go up 1% in a day. All you have to do is buy that one ETF, pay one commission, but what do you get? You get a piece of all 30 stocks.
And the point is, it probably will cost a hair less for the management fee because Alan and Dave can't afford to work for free when they buy this pizza and put all these companies in it. Now, normally the fee, just so you know, and this is something that they've been trying to correct for years, you don't normally see the fees. They show you what the value is every day. And the fee, let's say it's 1% a year. Let's just use that number.
Sure.
There's 365 days in a year. Even though the market's not open every day, they're basically going to subtract from that account value 1/365th of 1% per day as a fee. Now, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit, but that's how Pastor Dave and Alan would get paid because they own that great big pie with $100 million worth of stock in there. So they have to get paid. Now, where we're leaning towards, if we do ones that track indexes, like the Dow, like the Standard & Poor's 500, or like the NASDAQ 100, the fees are usually very low. They're much lower than 1% under most circumstances. Some of them are down to 0.25% or even less. Then divide that by 365. It's pennies a day that you're paying to Pastor Dave, so Dave, don't quit your day job because you can't afford it anymore.
That's true.
But all I'm trying to say is that the ETF, when we look at it side by side with the mutual fund, they're making a big dent in the mutual fund business because they, one, are normally not as expensive. Two, they provide more liquidity, meaning I can buy it and sell it actually within hours. I can buy it at 10 o'clock this morning and I can sell it at 1 o'clock this afternoon if I really needed to or wanted to. Whereas a mutual fund, it only has a price that you can buy or sell based on the close of business every day. So let's just say, Dave, that you called up Joe Martek and say, hey, Joe, I've got this mutual fund and I want to sell it and it's worth $10,000. Would you sell it for me? And I say, sure, Dave, no problem. You say, and Dave says, well, Joe, I just checked. It's worth $10,000. That was a close of business yesterday. It's 10 o'clock today. So I'm assuming I can get $10,000. And I said, not necessarily, Dave, because I can't sell it till 4 o'clock today. Mm-hmm. Now, between the time you called me, 10 o'clock in the morning, and 4 o'clock, that price can go up or down. Mm-hmm. Now, do you still want to sell it no matter what? Sometimes I say to people, listen, why don't you wait till 3 o'clock? Let's find out what it's worth and call me back. Because I've got time that I can sell it. I hate to wait until 3:59 because it upsets everybody because it's pretty hard to pull everything together. But if you call 3 o'clock, we find out what the value is, the odds are pretty good. It'll be very close to that price by the time 4 o'clock rolls around. Whereas the ETF, the price changes by the minute. And whatever it is this minute, if you called me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock, whatever that price is, I can call in and get that right now. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to wait till 4 o'clock.
And one big advantage of the ETF, too, and, you know, we've talked about protecting your money an awful lot. In a mutual fund, if you recall May 6th of 2010. It's known as the flash crash.
There you go.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average at one point had dropped over 1,000 points.
Little minor thing.
During the trading day. And at that time, the Dow was only about 11,000. So that was
a big hit.
A major hit. It came back to close down around 600, I believe, if my memory is correct. Mm-hmm. But if you were in a mutual fund and it was dropping like that, you could not get out until 4 o'clock,
right?
As you just said. In an ETF, you could either call your broker and say, sell at market right now, or if you did the smart thing, when it was confirmed that you owned it, you immediately put a price below the market as your stop price, which would get you out and protect most of your assets.
So let's explain it. Do you understand that one, Dave? Stop?
Explain what a stop is.
Stop price. Yeah, you'd explain it better than I, Joe.
Well, so. You do. You have heard it, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Literally, let's say I buy a share of stock for $100.
Mm-hmm.
And you say to me, now listen, I don't want to lose money. I say, well, I can't control that stock price. But what I can do, I can put into the computer a stop so that if it goes down to a certain price, let's say $90, it'll automatically sell. You say, okay, fine, do that. Now, can I guarantee you that you'd get 90 if it goes down to 50? Because what happens is, as it's sliding down and it hits that bell, you're not the only person that put in a stop to sell it. So it might sell at 89, 85, or might sell at exactly 90, but that's your stop price to stop your loss. And that's what it's called, a stop loss. And you want to stop your loss. On the other hand, you can put one in on the other side that is also, what's that one called, Alan? When it goes up, I want to sell it.
Well, that's just a limit order on the sell side.
You hear that? It's called a limit my gain. So I want to limit my gain. So, okay, I bought this share of stock for $100. If it goes up 10%, I want to sell it. Well, we can put that into the computer so that it automatically would sell if it goes up that price. Now, you might say 50%. Pick a number. I don't care what it is. But literally, with pure shares of stock or an ETF, you can do the same thing on ETFs that you can do on a stock. You can put in the stops or the limits. So you can stop your loss or limit your gain. And is that wise in every occasion? Not necessarily, because not everybody is a speculator or a trader. Some people say, hey, I don't care what it is, it's going to come back, because historically we're in America, they're going to average X percent per year, and usually it's been around 10, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. But it depends on your, again, I am not what you call a day trader. I don't do that, but I have some clients that are very aggressive traders, and they love the ETFs or individual shares of stock, and they can instantly make a phone call and buy or sell. So there's all kinds of things that can happen. Now, 99% of my clients and 99% of the people that I talk to are going to be like Todd, is saving money for retirement. They called in, and they want to make sure we're going to do the best we can. If I put them into an insured investment, that's got guarantees to protect the money by the insurance company. Now, you're supposed to know the insurance company's ability to pay claims. That's my compliance people say. I like to only deal with the highest rated insurance companies, because the insured investment very often will say, fine, here's what we're going to do. You put in X, let's just say 100,000, and you don't have to put 100. Usually you have 10,000 is the minimum that they start with. But let's say you had 100,000, and you say, hey, my main thing is, in case I drop dead, I want to make sure my wife's protected. So I want to protect that money for her or my kids or grandkids, whoever it might be. Fine. Very often these contracts have death benefits that say, we're going to guarantee your principal. And if you qualify, they will have a 5% per year growth death benefit, or and quarterly step-ups or annual step-ups, depending on the contract. So let's just take an example. Last year, we put this contract in with $100,000, and it was invested in the S&P 500, and the S&P 500 went up 19%. So at the end of the year, we had $119,000. Okay. Death benefit now is $119,000, or the market value. But let's just say 2 months later, the market went down to 100,000. What happened to my 19? Well, the death benefit says you die today, your family's going to get 119. Even though the contract's only worth 100, the insurance part says we're going to guarantee that principal. We're going to guarantee that step up. The different insurance companies have different guarantees. So same insurance company says, Dave says, okay, now what happens if I don't die? I say, well, Dave, that doesn't happen. It's called when, not if. You say, okay, what if I'm stuck living to be 100 years old? I don't want to run out of money. So, okay, fine. The insurance company says this. We'll put the money over here on the market. Market goes up and down. But the insurance company says what they'll do, if you qualify for it, they'll guarantee you a 5% per year income on what you put in. And on some companies, every year they'll step it up if the market goes up on the anniversary. So let's take last year's example. We put in this $100,000. That means I got $5,000 worth of income for the rest of my life. Now, this can go up, but it can never go down under the circumstances of the contract. Can never go down, but it can go up because once a year, they're going to recast it. So if it went up 20% for the year, I now have 120. They say, okay, fine, we're going to lock in the 120. Your income is now $6,000 a year for the rest of your life. And let's just say the next year, the income, we have a recession, market goes to kaplooey, and it goes down to 50,000. Well, you're at 120, and you're guaranteed that, your death benefit, and your income would be $6,000 a year for the rest of your life. Can't go down. But once a year, they're going to look at it, and if it goes higher than that number, they'll recast it and set it up. So there's all these little wrinkles that are put into an insured investment, especially when you get a person that's not so young. Kind of funny, I look at us gray hair people here, because when you're 20s and 30s and 40s, this doesn't make any sense to worry about being 70, 80, and 90. Sometimes you have the opportunities to take more risk, and you've got a chance to accumulate more money. But most people, when they are not so young, yeah, they want to make money, but they definitely don't want to lose money. So the insured investment really can make a big difference. And by the way, when we talked about it earlier today, when Todd called him, his accountant said, be concerned that you don't have a tax problem if the money is put into the wrong account. Well, you also can roll over a 401k away from an employer. Let's say you retire or you quit, you leave that employer. You can move that out of that employer and put it into your own account, which is now going to be called an IRA, individual retirement account. And now that can be invested any way you want. And you can go into the insured investment. Whereas the 401k usually doesn't have such things. They have limited investment options. So it's very often in your best interest not to stay with that company when you leave it. In fact, some companies want you to leave. It depends on the company. But the key thing is this. Making money is wonderful. Protecting it is more wonderful.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Joe, when Todd called in, I bet he called these phone numbers, 888-221-8990. And, you know, I was thinking about our discussion. There are really three levels of risk in the stock market. What you just talked about, the insured investment, that's the lowest risk. You're in the stock market, but you're protected for the most part. Right. The second level are ETFs. There is liquidity there, diversity. And the third level is picking individual stocks, which is the riskiest because you basically have to be right. And if the market goes up, say 20%, like it did last year, but you pick 10 stocks in a 10 stock portfolio that had surprisingly bad earnings, or like General Electric, you were not even up, let alone being up 20%.
Well, let's do something. This is one of my things we've not talked about. Have you ever heard of the investment triangle?
No.
Good. I know you have.
Yes. So that's not like the Bermuda Triangle.
Well, it's very similar. Similar. A triangle is a triangle. It's got a point at the top, and it's got a big wedge at the bottom, right? Mm. It's an A-frame.
It's an A-frame.
So we got this triangle. Well, when we talk about investment triangle, the top of this thing is high risk, the mm-hmm. bottom of it is low risk. So what would you consider the very bottom to be the safest investment that you can make?
Bury it in the ground.
That's pretty good. But usually it's called the bank.
Oh, the bank. Okay.
Because the bank isn't going to pay you much, but we got FDIC, $250,000, so we're really protected. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So now then we start moving up a little bit. Now, they oftentimes will say bonds would be the next one as far as safety goes, but let's just skip bonds because in an interest rate inclining market, when interest rates are going up, bonds very often go down. So that's not necessarily what I consider a good investment. On the other hand, if all you want is income from the bonds, and you buy a bonds for $1,000 a piece that are paying 5%, and at the end of 10 years you get your money back, and you're willing to go with that, forget about the volatility and the price if you want to sell it. That's what it is. So that mm-hmm. bonds are usually considered the next safest.
Okay.
Next safest would then be a mutual fund. Why? Because now what I'm doing, I'm taking a whole bunch of companies and I'm spreading my risk out over a whole bunch of companies. Now, a mutual fund or an ETF, exchange traded fund, they both look the same, smell the same, they're just a little bit different. So let's just put those two together, mutual fund slash exchange traded fund. Those are more risky, but not high risk yet. But now we go into the next one up, which is pure stock, which is what Alan just said. Yeah. So if we bought stock a few years ago in General Electric for $60 and this year it's down to 11, well, we didn't lose all our money, but if we wanted to sell it today, we'd really be upset because we just lost a whole bunch of our money.
Hmm.
But there is one more investment that's the highest risk there is, the very highest risk. You have any clue what that is?
No.
Loans to relatives.
So that's the peak of the triangle.
That's the peak of the triangle. Right. And anybody that's ever loaned money to a relative might understand that one.
And right below that are penny stocks.
Right. But let's just take pure stock as the high risk.
Right.
Now, when Alan said penny stocks, just so you know what penny stocks, they're traded. These are publicly traded, but they're not traded on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. They're traded what they call over the counter, and they're not as liquid, meaning if I want to sell it today, it may not sell till tomorrow, it may not sell for a few days, whereas if we normally take things on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, they normally sell immediately.
A good representation of penny stocks and how they work was the movie Boiler Room. Did you ever see that movie, Joe?
Yep. But penny stocks are high risk, period. In fact, when a client of mine says, Joe, I want to buy some penny stocks, they don't even know what it means, penny stock, but I explain it. The form they have to sign says, we are dumb as a stump. Joe tried to talk us out of it. He definitely didn't want us to do it, but we want to do it anyway, and we're willing to even pay him a commission to do it, even though he told us we were dumb. And now, it doesn't really say that, but that's basically what it says. In legalese, right?
Yes, you've watered it down perfectly.
Yeah. So the concept is it's high risk. Now, hey, look at every once in a while you can take and do one of these high risks, and they can, you know, you buy something for let's say a penny a share, and it goes up to 10 cents. Well, guess what happened? That's a 9,000% or 10,000% gain, 900 or 1,000% gain. Because if you had 100,000 shares at a penny, multiply that times 900, it's a fortune. But it's high risk. Anyway, we're winding down. Anybody else that has questions anytime, you can call the radio show anytime, 888-221-8990. Talk to Pastor Tom, Dave, Jonathan. They'll take your name and number and have us call you back. We're here to help you. We are a blessed group. We have been able to help a lot of people, and we are here to help people under any circumstances. As I said before, the group has roughly 200 years worth of experience, not even counting Alan, who's very, very old, and we don't want to even count him because he's...
Well, you know, Joe, when you look at our discussion today, we talked about ETFs, exchange-traded mutual funds, but 25 years ago, there wasn't such an animal.
No.
And so one thing about our business, the financial business, is the evolving based on changes in circumstances, both economically and the way people are living.
And technology.
Yeah.
What happens, what it's allowed to do. So things, it's a very exciting world for people today that have money to invest and places to do, that they can go from extremely high risk to almost no risk, and depending on how their circumstances. Let's take another call real quick. How much time do we have? Couple minutes. Good, we got time. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hi. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm reasonably good, thank you.
Very good. Yes, my question is, my company is about to close, and I do have a 401k.
Right.
And I wanted to know what is going to happen once the company closes with my 401k.
Well, what happens? Are you still working for the company?
The 25th of this month will be my last day.
Okay, fine. Then what you do on the 26th or thereabout, you can roll that away from the company. That's your money. And that 401k is protected by law. And you can transfer that into what's called an individual retirement account, which means you now control it, not the company. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So what happened is you left your name and phone number with Pastor Tom when you called in?
Yes, I did.
What I'll do, I will give you a call tomorrow. Are you working tomorrow?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be going out of town tomorrow. I'll be back by Tuesday.
Okay. I'll make a note to call you next Tuesday, and you and I will talk on the phone and make sure that you understand what your rights are, what you can do. And then if we can make this thing work for you, you're going to be happy.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you for calling, and have a wonderful time. Are you going to go on vacation?
No, my niece is getting married, so I'm going to a wedding.
That's not quite a vacation. That usually costs.
No, it's not.
That costs you money.
You're right about that. It's like thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Listen, sometimes having relatives is expensive.
There you go. So, well, we'll be looking forward to your call then. Okay.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day, and thanks for calling.
Joe, she should probably be talking with her human resource person at her company.
Not necessarily. No, we don't have to. Because what happens is, let's say that I can roll that forward. We call the human resources. We make sure they get done what needs to be done. It's very often when a person talks to them, they don't know the questions to ask, and the HR people are not very cooperative.
Well, we've got to say goodbye now, Joe.
We got to say goodbye. We got 15 seconds, 10 seconds, 5 seconds. Hey, listen, until next week, I want to thank everybody for listening. You say stop. You say stop. I guess we're going to leave you.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for calling. Bye.
Never been a sinner. I never sinned.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martek program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martek is available at 772-678-7725. Love song.